Hi, Ryan. How you doing?
Hey, welcome. Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Doing really well. Glad to be back. This is the first episode we're recording after the podcast went live, which was exciting yesterday.
Yeah, we have an actual audience. So hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Red Pen.
Yeah, already getting some feedback from people. And
people want to know more about your childhood. Is what we're hearing. Overwhelmingly, they're like, really unpack. They really want to know sort of what it was like to be a young Mike Laws.
I was asked if we could do like blow-by-blow game recaps of our basketball games.
We got to get the parents to send over some basketball pictures so we can share those with in the show notes.
It's got to be. I just saw one recently. I don't think you were in that one, but it was.
No, because we were never on the same team.
That's right. Yeah,
and it was back. It was back when like getting a picture taken was like a whole hassle.
Have you been watching Wednesday, Ryan?
No, but I'm super familiar with it. I know it's like a massive hit for Netflix.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think you're the only person in the country who's not watching. I mean, it's huge.
Is it for adults?
Yeah, although
I wasn't aware.
that's a good question. It's one my wife turned to me in the middle of episode 2, I think, and was like, "What age is this made for?" You know, because it does seem a little slippery with that. It's hard to tell if it's sort of like, you know, the early sort of lighter Harry Potter or the Alfonso Cuarón dark Harry Potter. You know?
That's the best Harry Potter, the Cuarón.
I don't think I ever saw that one, actually.
Ah, it's good.
I heard it's the best one.
Yeah.
Isn't it also the longest one, or is there...
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, brevity's not his thing.
So you're watching a children's television show, and you're thinking about grammar?
I was, but only because they made... And I wouldn't have cared about this. I don't think I would have if they didn't repeat the mistake. They made the same mistake twice in there. And I definitely wouldn't have cared as much if it didn't. It was in reference to Edgar Allan Poe, who, you know, being that we're from Maryland and that I lived in Baltimore for many years. Maryland's own, and a hero of mine. I think I would love him even if he weren't from Baltimore.
We have that and the blue crab. That's the only two things that ever came out of Maryland.
Our two most famous exports, the two proudest exports, anyway.
John Waters, too. We got John Waters.
Yeah, you know, I saw him at a rest stop, like one of those Sunoco stations.
Oh, I bet you
in
did.
New Jersey. It wasn't that kind of encounter. he walked by us into the rest stop, and my wife kind of nudged me because I hadn't seen him, and I was about to pass by him. And I just kind of, without thinking, I just blurted out like, "Hey, Mr. Waters." And he turns and looks at me, and I had absolutely no follow-up to that. Like, I couldn't think of a thing to say. I just kind of, I managed to get out like, are you on your way to Baltimore or something? And he just kind of...
Fascinating question.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's all I had chambered. I had nothing else. And he kind of just like said no and kept moving, got in line for Roy Rogers or something.
You creeped. So, you managed to creep out John Waters.
Yeah.
That is really hard to do.
I creeped out the uncreepoutable. I mean, yeah, it was amazing. So yeah, I'm watching Wednesday, and the other thing was that it had her character say this or like utter this mistake, which is totally not in keeping with her character, who's this like verbal demon. You know, she's like almost impossibly sharp tongued and like a wizard of repartee, and she says that Poe is, you know, they're at this school for outcasts, which again, very much like the wizarding school in Harry Potter. She's saying that the most famous, she should say alumnus of the school is Edgar Allan Poe, but says alumni instead, which, you know, is the plural.
That's plural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the male plural at that. So that, you know, that's sort of forgivable, I guess. But then the show repeats the mistake later in the episode. It has, I think it's the headmaster who says the same thing. She says, you know, something like, you've made our most famous alumni very proud. And she's standing right in front of a bust of Edgar Allan Poe. It's very clearly a reference to the singular, you know, man. Poet.
But there could be other alumni who are also proud that are not represented in the bust.
Yeah, and I did think about that. But No, it's very clear that they're talking about the one, just about Poe. So, you know, this...
So your problem is that Poe didn't go to this imaginary wizard school?
Right, like, keep it realistic, guys. Everybody knows he was in, you know, Virginia or whatever for his schooling. No, it was just that use of alumni. And then, I mean, I even got to thinking, like, clearly the writers of this show know about this, or somebody would have brought this to their attention. At least I hope so. Because so much of the dialogue is so clever. And I got to wondering whether they thought that maybe using alumnus there would have been distracting. Like, maybe it's not well known enough, or... You know what I mean? Like, maybe this was a conversation they had, and they actually decided to go with the incorrect usage because it would sound less wrong.
Interesting.
But anyway, you got to watch it. I'm shocked you haven't, really.
I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to watch. You know,
that's true.
There's White Lotus, and you know, there's thinking about White Lotus that has to happen in between episodes. So.
Mm-hmm. I know at the end of our last episode, I had promised to find some instances of dangling modifiers, which is the topic of today's show. You'll see this mistake referred to as both a dangling modifier or a misplaced modifier. And there might actually be a distinction between those terms. It's not one that I think we need to get into. These are all basically the same kind of mistake. And I'm going to try to sort of simplify from what you'll see in the reference manuals. There's a lot of sort of highfalutin terminology getting thrown around to refer to what are basically errors in all of the same type, all in the same category. So I don't want to get bogged down in things like, you know, some reference books will call these, they'll talk about finite verbs or subordinating conjunctions, things like that. I'm going to try to do my best to avoid that kind of terminology because it is really the same problem, whether we're talking about a dangling infinitive or a dangling gerund or a dangling participle. And whether we're calling it dangling or misplaced.
I prefer dangling.
Yeah, I like dangling too. And yeah. And I should say that in the business, every time you spot one of these, you just call it a dangler. That's how you get someone's attention with it. So
you're like, hey, that's a dangler.
Yeah, I say it's a dangler,
I'm a dangler.
It's a, yeah.
You're a dangler? Yeah.
Or it's dangly. Use that one a good deal. And also because a lot of the times I don't really know these terms. Like I said, the only real reason I know any of this stuff is from reading these reference manuals, or, you know, looking stuff up in them. Reading sounds like I actually read them cover to cover, which is not, I want to stress, is not true. And then I guess, you know, some of these terms I know from learning other languages and realizing what it would be in English. I guess the one exception there is that I'm going to talk about something called a squinting modifier, which is slightly different. It's a little, it's like a variation on the dangler, if you will.
I'm excited to get some examples of these dangli.
Now, dangly. you know, dangler is also a hockey term, so it's always kind of funny when I hear that too. It's
what does that mean in hockey?
It's like someone who's very good at stick handling.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
All of these things have
all
such...
of our. Richard all of our Williams. Canadian, all of our Canadian listeners are,
yeah,
like feel heard,
sitting erect.
They're not dangling now.
Sitting bolt upright, edge of the seat. Yeah, it's someone who's good at handling the puck. I guess because you're able to like dangle the puck away from your body and then draw it back in close to you. It's like
good. Are you when it comes to hockey, are you a dangler?
Yeah, I'm known for dangling a bit. I'm known for my stick handling. Yeah,
you got good. A good control over that stick.
Yeah, I use a really short stick. actually. This is this is still sounding so Irish. Much like the Irish curse of hockey players. I cut my sticks down quite a bit so that I can stick handle closer to the body more
effectively. Is that legal? Yeah, nobody just has it. You can use different size sticks.
The opposite is you don't get into illegal sticks unless you're talking about the opposite, where you can't have one beyond a certain length, unless you're really tall, and then you can get an exception and you can have a longer stick than is usually allowed. But yeah, you can cut it down kind of as much as you want. So yeah, I'm good at that. I'm a good passer. Try to be unselfish. That's kind of my thing. I'm a finesse player, Ryan.
I like that. Dangling finesse player. No need to modify that.
No, sir.
Well, let's get into some of these examples, Mike, of non-hockey related dangling.
Right. Although maybe we'll find a hockey example in here. If there's a goal. Do you know what we're referring to when we talk danglers?
In the non-hockey context?
Right, in the non-hockey, non-sexual euphemism context, yeah.
I think I have like a good idea, but I think it would be worth giving the audience and me just sort of like a, you know, the 101 definition of a dangler.
Yeah, sure. And it's, you know, I find that this is actually a bit hard to define. So I'm going to lean on the old Village Voice style guide, which I think is really good on this point. Like Chicago, if you look this up, you're going to come away with a bunch of terms that, you know, you don't really need in your workaday life sorting these things out. But yeah, the Village Voice style guide, I think, is really useful. And it gives like a million examples of these and then offers advice on how to smooth them out or rewrite, as the case may be. So it says, a dangler, perhaps the most common error made by literate people, occurs when a faulty sentence structure causes a modifying phrase to modify the wrong thing. And the way I think about this is, in like 99% of cases, these things happen at the beginning of a sentence, and it's usually a short phrase, like an incomplete sentence followed by a comma. So something that couldn't stand on its own, followed by a comma. And it's almost always a setup that involves ing, so like the present progressive tense, or ed. Let's give some examples to make this less abstract. And again, these can happen in other parts of a sentence, and it can involve setups that are of a different type than that. But yeah, like 90 plus percent of cases, it's going to be that, a short introductory phrase followed by a comma. To give you one example, and this does also come from the Village Voice style guide, to bake a vegan cake, an egg replacer is needed. So that's a faulty sentence because you have no idea who's baking the cake, the vegan cake in this case. Or if you did, you might think that it was the egg replacer, which makes no sense. So I guess that's a way of saying that these might not even scan as errors at first blush. I mean, there's no clear problem with that sentence just on the level of like the, you know, it has a subject and an object. There's a verb in there, but logically it makes no sense. To bake a vegan cake, an egg replacer is needed.
So what would be correct? Like, to bake a vegan cake, you need an egg replacer?
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's the fix that the Village Voice style guide suggests. So well done. Yeah.
I would just not bake a vegan cake. That's a great start.
I would avoid a vegan cake at all costs. Oh, God. I'm going to hear from the old managing editor at the Village Voice, who is a proud vegan. But yeah,
you always get to hear from vegans.
They do tend to let you know. Yeah, but really, there you go. Well done there, Ryan.
Thank you.
I'm impressed. Okay, here's another example. And I think this is the next couple I'm going to give, I think, are even more common types than that last one. That last one is actually, and I'm getting into the terminology I said I wouldn't, but that was an infinitive, a dangling infinitive, to bake a vegan cake being what dangles there. And you can see why they're called danglers, because they sort of hang there waiting to modify something, but then they modify the wrong thing, or there's nothing to modify. So another example here, inhaling the heady smoke. Oh God, this is such a Village Voice example too. You know, we've already got a reference to marijuana. Inhaling the heady smoke, the well-known tagline drops into her thoughts. So you see what's wrong there.
And inhaling the heavy smoke.
Heady, but yeah.
The heady, yeah. Heady and heavy. It might be heavy as well.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. So, I don't see what's dangling there.
Okay, so to give the sentence. Inhaling the heady smoke, the well-known tagline drops into her thoughts. So the issue here is that first phrase, inhaling the heady smoke, appears to modify the well-known tagline.
Right.
So you have, logically there, you would have the well-known tagline is inhaling smoke.
Oh, I see.
And again, it's...
So you would say in inhaling the heavy smoke, comma, she imagined or put her there in the subject area.
You could do that, or you could change that first bit within the dangler, which involves a little bit of rewriting. It involves sort of recasting the sentence so that you're not starting with that the ing verb, and you could say as she inhales the heady smoke, and then leave the rest intact. So as she inhales the smoke, the tagline drops into her thoughts. But sure, you could do it your way too. And I think that would also involve a little bit of rewriting, like inhaling the smoke, she finds the tagline dropping into her thoughts, something like that.
Now, if you were editing this, would you just make that edit, or would you make a note and say, like, give a suggestion for how the sentence could be fixed? Like, when you're actually editing something.
Yeah, I think I would split the difference. And for the most part, we're working in Microsoft Word or Google Docs, and you can track your changes so that the writer or editor, whoever you're working with, can review your suggestion. So I think I would go ahead and make the change, but I would leave it in that tracked form so that it can be approved. Same style guide here. Okay, this is a two sentence example. They are in a supportive relationship, but that bond developed only after traversing their unhealthy sexual relationships.
Say it one more time.
Sure. They are in a supportive relationship, but that bond developed only after traversing their unhealthy sexual relationships.
I don't know.
Okay, so the error there is in the second sentence. But that bond developed only after traversing their unhealthy sexual relationships. And it's in that final clause, like only after traversing. And the issue is that you have a bond, that bond as the subject of that sentence. So that bond is the thing doing the traversing there, which is not what the intent is.
Right.
So I think you would need to fix this. You would need to call back to the first sentence in the example and just drop another they in there, or, you know, whoever they refers to. So something like they are in a supportive relationship, but that bond developed only after they traversed their unhealthy sexual relationships, something like that. So repeating the subject from the first sentence, or clarifying the subject from the first sentence.
That sounds, I mean, it's a wordy sentence to begin with.
Yeah, and I was gonna say I don't love Traversed there. Like,
no,
I mean it's like they developed this bond after they had like traveled across their unhealthy sexual relationships. I mean that's a
and that with those unhealthy sexual relationships with other people.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you would think so because it's plural sexual right. relationships.
I don't think this relationship's gonna last.
No, I don't. It doesn't sound
really,
good.
That's really the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree though.
It's modifier not a, or not.
Yeah, there are other issues with this beyond faulty modifiers. Okay, and let's this time not from the Village Voice style guide, but I actually dug these up out of work emails. So this is real life examples of danglers that came up in the course of my work.
What other podcast do you have Mike Laws reading you emails from his work, folks?
I mean, hopefully none.
This podcast could have been an email.
And I hope no one, because these are real life examples, I hope no one takes offense to this. I'm not going to name any of
not,
the writers.
It's not name and shame.
No, no. Yeah. And there's no shame in this. I mean, no. I know I've done this a million times. And like I said, one of my favorite novels of all time, Infinite Jest, is a prime offender in this category. And, you know, I think both of these examples that I'm about to give you, the scent is clear enough. Like most readers would probably just glance right over this. But we are at CJR, where both of these came up, aiming for, you know, as clean a read as possible, as mistake-free an experience as possible. So, yeah, no, there's no shame. But here's an example. A libertarian, this is about Dave Rubin, by the way, if that rings any bells for you.
I have known Dave Rubin since he was a liberal. I remember going to parties with him in the alts where he was just like a normal
classical liberal
guy, and he hadn't found his grift. I mean, his beat yet.
Okay, you're gonna love this then. Okay, a libertarian. Rubin's pet grievances include the political establishment, the media establishment, big tech, censorship, and left-wing hypocrisy. Can you tell me what's wrong with that?
I can't quite figure out what's wrong with the sentence.
Okay, so it's all in that first clause.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that short little descriptive thing ending with a comma that can't stand on its own. So the same category as, you know, 90%+ of these, and it's a libertarian. So that's modifying the noun that comes next, which isn't Rubin. It's Rubin's pet grievances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So again, like this, the sense is clear enough. You wouldn't,
yeah.
Or you probably wouldn't bat an eye, but yeah, technically you've got grievances being libertarian there, which doesn't stand up to logical scrutiny.
It might actually.
Yeah. For you. Yeah.
Grievances are a bit libertarian.
Having grievances is a hallmark of libertarianism. So yeah, in this one, and this is an example of something where I think I probably would leave a comment or write an email sort of calling attention to this being a dangler and suggesting a fix, because the rewrite isn't quite so simple. It involves not just changing the order of things or changing the tense of something, but actually rephrasing a bit. Because there sort of is no super simple fix to this. You could try to say a libertarian, comma, Rubin grieves, but that doesn't make any sense. Rubin grieves the political establishment. You know, what had been a noun there doesn't lend itself to becoming a verb quite so easily. So you need a new verb, and that's the reason I would flag this via email or in a comment in the margins of a Word doc or Google doc or what have you. So I emailed the editor and the writer in this case, and I suggested a libertarian, comma, Rubin rails against the political and media establishments, big tech, censorship, and left-wing hypocrisy. And then I even offered an alternative. If they didn't like Rails Against, you could go with Inveys Against, which basically the same thing, but maybe like a little bit softer, you know, not quite so.
I think he rails, so I think Rails is probably the right word there.
I thought so too. And if memory serves, that's what we went with. So the writer was into it as well. But yeah, just a couple of options because sorting this out demanded a new verb. So yeah, to answer your earlier question, in that case, I would have a bit more of a dialogue with the editor or writer or both as the case warrants. And then another one also came up at CJR. Upstairs in bed with my ex-boys. As journalists, and particularly as Indigenous journalists and journalists of color, our stories, field notes, and communities ask a great deal of us.
Love the idea behind it. let me see.
It's that same thing.
This is really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like once that switch gets flipped in your brain, you'll see these all over the place, but until that happens, you just read right past them, which is why I think the Village Voice style guide is right to say that it's the most common mistake made by really literate people. It's such an easy thing to do, and yeah, again, most readers don't bat an eye at it, but there it is. And it comes down to that very first clause again. This one doesn't have a comma because it's interrupted by a pair of M dashes. It's as journalists, right. M dash, and particularly as Indigenous journalists and journalists of color, M dash. But same idea, as if there were a comma there. And if you set aside that phrase contained within the dashes, you would just have as journalists, comma, our stories, field notes, and communities ask a great deal of us. And the issue there is that you're applying that first phrase, as journalists, to a subject that turns out to be stories, notes, and communities, which obviously aren't journalists.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay. So to fix it, you would lead with stories, notes, and communities.
You could do it that way. There are probably several ways to skin this cat. But again, it's a good example of one that's not so easy to fix. It doesn't just involve changing one word or one tense. So yeah, in this case, again, I emailed everyone to point out the issue here and suggested a fix, which ended up being our stories, field notes, and communities ask a great deal of us as journalists, and particularly as Indigenous journalists and journalists of color, especially in moments of grave consequence like the present, which was the end of that sentence that I had been omitting earlier. So yeah, again, it was just one that it rose to that level of needing a little more love, a little more rewriting, enough that I didn't feel comfortable just doing it and sort of presenting it to the writer or editor.
It's these things can be pretty complicated, and the solutions can definitely vary in style and to your point, you have to sometimes rewrite the entire sentence.
Right. Yeah. And in those cases, I try to keep as much of the original sentence intact as possible. You know, you want to do your best to avoid interrupting the rhythm that the sentence type that the writer had in mind. I mean, trying to be as delicate as possible. This is something I teased a little bit earlier. What's known as the squinting modifier. And this is going to happen for the most part in the middle of a sentence, I find. And it's called squinting, I guess, because it can be read as addressing either what comes before it or what comes after it. So it's like that pair of eyes sort of looking sidelong. I guess that's how I think of it anyway. Webster's defines this as a squinting modifier. That's what you'll find in the dictionary. And it's a modifier so placed in a sentence that it can be interpreted as modifying either what precedes or what follows, which, you know, is, I've actually seen this done deliberately a time or two where the writer meant for it to happen because they wanted it to modify both parts of the sentence. But that was like an extreme exception. And usually this is a mistake that you want to avoid.
There are examples where it could work. It could be almost intentional.
And in this case, I'm forgetting the writer it was, but it was someone writing for The Voice who, I want to say it was like a Greg Tate or a Robert Christgau, someone I really, really liked, even before I started there, who had done it intentionally. And I just thought it was really, really cool. I still flagged it and I still asked about it just to make 100% sure, at which point they verified that it was very much deliberate. So yeah, really, a really cool sort of like, but very rare, like edge case there. But yeah, usually this is going to be done in error. And it's something like, and this is the example from that definition in Webster's, getting dressed often is a nuisance, or getting dressed often is a nuisance. And you see the problem there is the word often. It could lead you to come away with two different understandings.
Yeah, it could be having to get dressed often is a nuisance, or sometimes getting dressed is a nuisance.
Yeah, exactly. And I would just suggest either of those two fixes that you just made, depending on what the intent is there. And this is from my time at the Voice. Although Ottens's death is remembered well by many older residents of Iowa City, in the main, interest in Ottens from outside that community has come from crime writers. And the issue with that one, and I'll read it again with slightly different intonation, so you can maybe hear the other possible meaning. Although Ottens's death is remembered well by many older residents of Iowa City in the main, interest in Ottens from outside that community has come from crime writers. So the issue there is the "in the main" that's smack in the middle of that sentence and set off by commas. So it could refer to everything that preceded it, meaning like, although the death is remembered well for the most part, or it could apply to what comes after it. So although the death is remembered well, for the most part, interest has come from outside that community. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do see what you mean.
So it's in that case, the fix could just be as simple as removing one of the commas, so that in the main applies more firmly to one side of the sentence or the other. But in this case, I did suggest I got into more of a dialogue with the editor here and suggested a fix that just got rid of the clause "in the main" completely. And that was, although Ottens's death is remembered well by many older residents of Iowa City, interest in her from outside that community has come largely from crime writers. Chicago breaks things down into these different types of danglers, like, because they're just all basically the same, you know. It's always, or most of the time at least, a clause at the beginning of the sentence, almost always set off with a comma, and then the problem is that would seem to apply to the word just after it, and logically it can't, or logically it doesn't.
Right. So that's really the thing to look out for.
Yeah, in most cases, yeah, that sort of hanging clause at the beginning of a sentence.
I bet I'm guilty of this all the time. And when I go back through and look at some of my writing, I'm going to be ashamed.
You'll notice it. Yes, I mean, same here. And that was, again, this was another rule. I'm pretty sure I didn't know about this, or I wasn't constantly hunting for it in the same way before I started at The Voice. So I think I probably missed a lot of these throughout my career at the Hill before I moved to New York and went to The Voice. And then once you're aware of it, it's that kind of thing where you can never unsee it again, you know?
Yeah.
But we should say that there are, and again, The Voice does a good job of pointing this out in its style guide. There are danglers that aren't, or something that once you're looking for these, you might think you've found a good example in constructions that kind of aren't true danglers. And there are a couple different kinds of these, but again, they're basically the same. So we'll skip over the terminology and just give examples of them. But it's what the Voice style guide calls, it refers to them as danglers that have become acceptable by losing their participial force.
Wow.
Yeah. So things like based on
participial.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great word.
That's a great word.
Yeah, you don't see that a ton outside of these reference guides. the adjective form of participle. I mean, you're really deep in the weeds when you're seeing that. But yeah, that's how it refers to these, that they've lost their participial force and now function simply as prepositions. So things like based on, considering, given, or other types of constructions like that said. So, you know, it might look like a dangler to say that said, you might be surprised, blah, blah, blah. And the you isn't really the subject or the you that appears to be the subject isn't the thing that was doing the saying. So it sort of looks like a dangler, but it's one of these that's lost that. And it's, I guess I just think of these as like, they're almost like sentence adverbs, like most important, that kind of construction. It's I like the way that the Voice style guide characterizes these as having lost that force, because I think that is kind of how I think of them. With an example it gives being based on the report, they changed their policy, or considering the snow, it's best to stay home, which is a great one, because considering the snow, it is best to stay home. There actually is no real subject in that sentence. The only subject would be it. And,
right.
And in this case, that's what's known as a grammatical expletive. It's taking the place of a subject, but you couldn't ever tell me what it refers to. You know, you'll see this occasionally with, like, usually in reference to weather, like it is raining. I mean, what does it refer to there?
The weather, the current weather.
Like but what's doing the raining, you know?
Yeah.
Like the atmosphere, I guess. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's just hard to even say. So yeah, that's what's called an expletive, grammatically speaking. So I love that example for including that. But yeah, it sort of looks like it's an example of one of these, but it's that first clause has just lost that force, that sense. So it's not, and it's kosher to have a sentence like that. On the other hand, I think you could find examples where things like that would be a true dangler. Like, if I were to say to you, growing up, it rained a lot, you know, that I think I would still characterize that as a dangling modifier, because whatever's doing the raining isn't what grew up. You know, I think you'd want to say, when I was growing up, it rained a lot.
But people don't want to hear too much about our childhoods.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't rain.
It rained normally.
Yeah, it didn't rain over much growing up. It was awfully humid down there. It was
very humid.
That was the main thing.
You and I don't do well in humid spaces.
Oh, my God. I don't. Yeah. My wife's always talking about this trip to the Philippines we're going to be taking one day. And I'm just dreading it already.
It's going to be warm there.
Even hearing about it, I just start sweating, you know. I know, yeah. I'm not going to do well in that climate. Let's get into the track changes section, Ryan.
It's track changes.
So, yeah, a couple things that we got wrong or debatably got wrong from the past couple of episodes. One, Ryan, was that, and we mentioned this in our very first episode, which, again, just got out before a real audience. So we heard from a mutual friend of ours, Terrence Kane, back from our hometown, who told me that his family did indeed subscribe to the New York Times.
Oh my gosh. So there was a New York Times, like that was a possibility?
I guess so. And that's the first I've ever heard of that. I'm trying now to think back to like gas stations in Salisbury and if I ever saw a copy of the Times, and I can't remember, but I also offhand don't think I ever did.
I can't recall ever even seeing one in the flesh, you know, until I was older.
Right. And I feel like I do remember seeing the Washington Post at this, you know, at like a bagel shop or at a gas station, but I don't think I saw the Times. But yeah, I guess it was possible. And the Canes being the family to do it makes sense. You know, their dad was a professor of philosophy at the university and, you know, likely candidate for a New York Times reader.
Yeah, most definitely.
The other thing I wanted to quickly bring up was my sister, and I just caught myself doing this again. My sister complained that I pronounced the T in the word often, or often, I guess, is how you're meant to say it. Do you do that, Ryan? How do you pronounce that word?
Often.
Yeah, see? So you pronounce the T.
Often. But how else would I say it?
So I guess I looked into this, and first of all, Webster's, the dictionary I go to, does list the pronunciation with the T, and it gives that pronunciation first, so it might even prefer it. But it also gives the often, the pronunciation where you don't hear the T. And then I looked it up in Garner's Modern American Usage, my favorite, and he says that the... So I'll give you this is great. So I'll give you the quote. He says, "The educated pronunciation is often, but the less adept say often." And he also says that the way we pronounce it with the T is what he calls non-U or not upper class.
Wow.
Which I'm kind of proud of, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, those are fighting words.
Yeah, for real. But I don't want to sound upper crusty. I want to be non-U.
I mean, I feel like that's probably a fairly dated view of things, you know?
That's kind of what I think, too. Yeah. My sister...
I didn't know Jesse was such a stickler.
Well, she says that... And I didn't remember this teacher doing this. We both had Mrs. Biddle as a grammar teacher in high school. And I didn't remember that this was a pet peeve of hers, but my sister, Jesse, apparently... says that apparently it was, and she would like correct people in class anytime she heard T in that word, which I can't imagine that came up that much, but I guess it did.
She was teaching a bunch of high class kids. She wanted them to sound like hillbillies, you know?
right. And I can understand that impulse in Salisbury. I mean,
I bet she failed mostly.
You hear a lot of non-U speech in Salisbury, as you they do. Say.
Often. Often. You often do.
Yeah, you often do. I'm going to go out of my way to emphasize it now. So what are we doing next week, Ryan?
What are we doing?
Well, I was thinking we do words that inflect differently depending on specific senses of the word. So words that can mean either of, and that you conjugate differently depending on those senses. A word like bid, which, you know, you can bid goodbye or you can bid on something at an auction.
Right.
And depending which of those senses you're using, it's going to have different past tense forms, past participle forms.
So words that, is there any cleaner way to say that than words that inflect differently depending on specific?
I thought that was pretty clean. I guess
it just rolls right off the tongue.
Words that you conjugate differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, words that form different past tenses, yeah. I guess. Yeah. There's, I don't know that there's.
So from dangling to conjugation, we're going to take you next week. You're going to learn about words that inflect differently depending on specific senses.
That's right.
And Mike, I really want people, if they have questions or comments or feedback, to go and give us those 5 stars on Apple, and then leave us in the comments. Write your questions, write your feedback. You know, let us know if you enjoy hearing about our childhood or not. If you have a grammar question for Mike or a subject that you'd like us to explore, just leave that in the comments. So go in there, give us that 5 stars. It's how people find us, and leave your comment with any feedback or questions you have for us.
Yeah, I'm excited to read that too. And I think you do have to leave the star rating first.
You do. You got to rate us, and then you get that opportunity. So you give us the 5 stars, and then you get the opportunity to ask Mike a question.
Right.
Look or me.
To it. Yeah, you know, or Ryan.
It won't be as good an answer. I mean, it depends on the question.
Don't sell yourself short like that. You have plenty to offer.
We've left a lot dangling here this afternoon, Mike.
We have.
Yeah.
Dangling
we'll see
like
you.
Like a carrot.
We'll see you next week on Red Pen.
Till then.
Red Pen is brought to you by the Columbia Journalism Review and is Mike Laws, my fabulous co-host and good buddy, Ryan J. Davis, and producer, Amanda Derrick.
So everybody, listen and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave questions for Mike on grammar right on the Apple Podcast app, and we can respond to those in a future episode. Often, often, girl, I do this all-